Good morning. Last week, we began discussing the halachos of dealing with a dispute of which bezin to go to. So this week, I'd like to briefly summarize the halachos, go through a little bit more detail, and then to discuss the halacha l'maisa, how this issue plays itself out in real life. So as we explained, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, at least in theory, writes that when there's a dispute over which bezin to go to deal with a matter locally or to go to the Makom Hava, to travel to a better bezin, the teveya, the plaintiff, has the upper hand. The Gemara mentions two svaras, either Eved Loiva Lishmalva, that the teveya who lent money to the borrower, the borrower is indebted to him, and therefore the plaintiff has the right to choose the venue. Most Rishonim say this is not dafka et malva and loiva, but at most cases the teveya will have the upper hand. In addition, there's a svara that because the teveya is the one that's asserting the claim, if a nitzva of a defendant would have the right to say, I want to travel, I want to go elsewhere, it will make it difficult. You're going to force someone to be moitzi mona almona. The defendant will have an incentive to insist on traveling as a way to force the plaintiff to drop his claim, and therefore we do not grant him that right. The teveya, on the other hand, since he is the one that's asking for the money, there's an assumption if he's willing to travel for a better bezdin, he's serious about it and sincere in his request. Now that Gemara in Sanhedrin is discussing going to a Makom Avad. There's a Gemara in Bava Kamma that discusses going to the Bezdin Hagadol, and there already some Rishonim learn that either party has the right to insist on going to the Bezdin Hagadol. Nevertheless, Tosfos and Rosh both speak out that before anyone can say, I'd like to go to the Bezdin Hagadol, he has to establish that he has a valid claim. Either he has to show evidence that there was a loan, there was a relationship, or perhaps he has to go to the local Bezdin and let them hear the basics and see if it's appropriate to travel. And this prevents someone from simply extorting and forcing someone to travel for absolutely no reason. So Mekar Hadin, the Teveya, has the upper hand in which city to go to. That's when the issue is which city to have the Din Torah in. If you have two Batei Dinim or two Dayanim that are local, so here already there's a different Machlokes. According to the Smag, the Nitva has the upper hand. He can insist on going to another Bezdin, another Dayan, even if he is a Kohen, even if he's less knowledgeable than the Dayan or the Bezdin that the Teveya chose. As long as he's qualified to be a Dayan, the Nitva will have the upper hand. Other Rishonim argue and say that if they're equal, the Teveya has the upper hand, and certainly to go to a lesser Bezdin, the Nitva cannot insist. However, as a matter of halacha, the Smag is brought down by Shulchan Aruch, and locally, in the same city, the nitva will have the upper hand. He can say, I want to go, but dafka to this bezdin. Now, the Rambam writes that although what we've just said is the Mekar Hadin, what the halacha should be, the minhog, and this is already from the times of Ma'arik, the minhog is regarding any issue of which bezdin or which city, the nitva has the upper hand. The Teveya cannot force the nitva to agree to his choice of a bezdin. No, we don't go out of town at all. It's always locally, and we always have a din, and we always have a din of holchan achar hanitva. Now, so that is the minhag, and that's the halacha l'maisa, that the nitva will have the upper hand. The Teveya can never force you to go to a particular bezdin. If a person receives a hazmana from a bezdin, so the halacha is you have to respond to a hazmana. However, you do not have to appear in front of that bezdin. You have every right to say, I'd like to go to a different bezdin. The one exception to this case is that if the city has a bezdin kavua, if there's a formal bezdin in the city, so in that case, if this bezdin is in charge of the issues of this city, you cannot go ahead and say, I'd like to travel to another city. Or you cannot say, I'd like to make my own bezdin. When there is a bezdin kavua, they are the ones that have jurisdiction, and the din Torah has to take place there, and neither the teveya or the nitva can avoid that. Unfortunately today, the Gris Moshe writes, we do not have a bezdin kavua. even though there are many Batei Din. However, the Batei Din are not elected. They weren't put in place by any formal system. There are you do not have Zayin Tov Ve'ir. There were no elections. They weren't appointed by the people in the city. Adrab, what happens is you have a Koilov. They get together. They open up. They hang up a big sign. We're opening up a new Beis Din. And they start functioning as a Beis Din. So they have the right to do so, but they're not a Beis Din Kavua. They were not formally appointed or given any jurisdiction by the city. And therefore, they do not have the right to force people to sit and to come in front of them. And therefore, there was Moshe Paskins today. He's referring actually in New York. He said, we do not have a Beis Din Kavua, so you can never force the Nitzvah to appear in any particular Beis Din. There are certain exceptions. You have certain either out-of-town communities where they have enough achdus and unity where there is one Beis Din and it was appointed by the people in the city, by the shuls got together. And in such a case, you avoid all of the issues that you have in fighting over this Beis Din, that Beis Din, which Beis Din's better. You certainly solve a lot of problems, but you need a fair amount of achdus where everyone will get together and appoint a specific Beis Din. You also have it in limited kehilos, like if you have a chassidus, where they appoint a Beis Din. This is the Beis Din that is in charge of all Dine Mominus. So if you're a member of that kehila, so being a member, so you pay membership dues, there are certain expenses or responsibilities that come with it. If the kehila appoints a Beis Din, they would also have a din of a Beis Din kavua, at least for the members of that kehila. So that we mentioned, you need a Beis Din Kavua to force someone to come in front of this Beis Din. However, any Gimel Head Yoytzes have the right to send a Hazmana and tell someone you have to come to a Din Torah. Now, it doesn't have to be to us. You want to respond by saying, I'm going to a different Beis Din? That's a perfectly legitimate response. But to ignore it or to say, I'm not going to a Din Torah at all, then any Gimel Head Yoytzes, any three people have the right to put out a Siruv. So that is, the Koyach to put out a Siruv does not require a Beis Din Kavua. And in fact, today in the United States, where we do not have many Batei Din Kavua, they put out Siruv as Gimel Hedyotis.
You have to name the other Beis Din going to?
Yes, saying in theory, I'm willing to go to a Beis Din, just not you, is not a response. You have to say, I don't want to go to you, I'm willing to go to this other Beis Din. And this is Ma'isim B'chol Yom. And we'll talk about it more in a moment, but most Hazmanos, the response is, I'm going to go to a Din Torah, but not by you. Not in theory, not. There's no halacha in writing per se. I mean, today it's usually done by email, but as long as you indicate you're willing to go to a Beis Din, they cannot put out a Siruv. Well, what will happen sometimes, if it's just verbally and there's no follow-up, and the Beis Din Hamazman will at some point call this other Beis Din that you named, and ask, did this fellow call you? Did he indicate that he's willing to accept your Beis Din? Unfortunately, the answer sometimes is no. Sometimes they just throw out names without being serious or without following through. And at that point, the Beis Din Hamazman will continue the process and threaten and ultimately put out a Siruv if there's no concrete steps that are taken. Basically, when a person gets a Hazmana, he can never be forced to go to a particular Beis Din. He has to respond. He has to agree to go somewhere, but he does not have to agree to the Teveya's choice. Now, this leads us to a rather, unfortunate and somewhat amusing back and forth and dance that happens when you try to initiate a Din Torah. Typically, when you send a Hazmana, the person who receives the Hazmana, their knee-jerk reaction is that if this Beis Din sent a Hazmana, probably the Teveya, before he went to that Beis Din, did his research, decided that this Beis Din will be the most favorable to his position, and that's why he sent a Hazmana from that Beis Din. So whatever I do, whatever my response is, I'm going to go anywhere else but this particular Beis Din. And generally, the knee-jerk reaction is they'll go elsewhere, and then they scramble trying to find which Beis Din to go to. Now, certainly, as we mentioned before, when you get a Hazmana, you have no obligation to go to the Beis Din that sent the Hazmana. And in fact, before you go to any Beis Din, it is important to do your homework. There are many different Batei Din. They have different reputations. They have different strengths. They have different areas of expertise. And a person certainly should research the Beis Din carefully before he chooses which Beis Din to go to. Once you go there, once you sign an arbitration agreement, a Shtab Rurin, you are locked in. And afterwards you wake up and say, but now you heard terrible things about the Beis Din and this and that, it's going to be too late. Once you sign an arbitration agreement, you're more or less stuck with this particular Beis Din. So you certainly should not rush to any decisions. You certainly should do your homework, ask around, and make sure that the reputation of the Beis Din is appropriate. However, that being said, the fact that this particular Beis Din is the one that sent a hazmana is not a very good reason to reject it. First of all, most people who send hazmanas do not think about it all that much. They turn to the Beis Din that will send the hazmanas the quickest or most efficiently. If they do think about it, if they do make these calculations, which Beis Din will be best for my side, and they believe they know the case well enough to sort of predict which Beis Din will rule in which way, and that, there they make the decision. However, today, where everyone knows the knee-jerk reaction of a nitzvah is, if I get a hazmana from this Beis Din, I'm going to go anywhere but here. So people today generally send hazmanas from the Beis Din that they don't want to go to. So adrabah, in many cases, you are probably best off if you got the hazmana from this Beis Din, but dafka, go ahead and take this Beis Din. Of course, when the secret gets out, things will change again. And you'll have to be a good poker player to figure out what's to your advantage and what isn't. My advice really is to ignore the question of the fact of where the hazmana came from. Do your research as if you didn't get a hazmana. Pick the Beis Din that you're most comfortable with, that has the best reputation. And whether they sent the hazmana or didn't send the hazmana really should not play a role. The fights, the back and forth, and these kind of games really don't benefit anybody. Now, what happens if you send your hazmana from one particular Beis Din? The nitzvah responds and says, I'm ready to go to a Beis Din. I don't want this Beis Din. And he names a second Beis Din. Tadeya said, listen, I know I can't force you to take my Beis Din, but I don't want your Beis Din. Let's find a third Beis Din, a fourth Beis Din. So usually what happens is the parties do make an attempt. The Beis Din that sends the hazmana asks each party to give a list of three batei din they're willing to accept. If there is some overlap between the Tadeya's and the Nitva's choices, then that's where the din Torah goes to. If there is no overlap, or if the Nitva plays hardball and says, listen, I have this, either I don't want to go to any of your batei din, then they have the right to push it to a zabla. What is a zabla? So a zabla, as we mentioned briefly last week, is it stands for Zeh Boirer Loi Echad. What happens is that in a zabla, each party chooses one boirer, one dayan. So now you have two dayanim, one chosen by the first side, by the Tevea, one chosen by the Nitva. The two dayanim together then choose a third dayan. This third dayan is the shalish. He is the independent or impartial dayan. And that is how you have your din Torah. You have three dayanim, one chosen by each side, the third one, which is impartial, that was chosen by both sides together. Now, there is a machlokes how to choose the third side, the third dayan. Do the two boyer and the two dayanim choose, or do the litigants choose? Al pi halacha, the dayanim are the ones that actually make the choice. However, in practice, it's done in consultation with the balei din. That's done for two reasons. First of all, halacha is that when a Baal Din chooses a boyer, he has the right to say, you have to take my input before you pick a shalish. But in addition, the halacha that the two dayanim can choose the shalish on their own is only when it's a psak din. When you're dealing with pshara, when you're giving them the right to make a pshara, there you cannot put a dayan on without the Baal Dinim's agreement. Since today, batei din always have the right to make at least a pesher kar of the din, they have some ability to make a pshara, so therefore you cannot pick a shalish without their consent. And therefore, the way it works is that each baal din picks a dayan. The dayanim, together in consultation with the balei din, pick a shalish, pick the neutral dayan who will end up being machriya, who will end up being the bottom line decision for the case. If they cannot agree to a shalish, then it goes back to the Beis Din HaMazmen, And the Bezdin has the right to force them. If you can say to the Taveh and the Nitzvah, if you can't agree to a third party, either they can choose a Shalish and impose it, or they can pull it back to the actual Bezdin. Again, this rarely happens. Most Zablas, there are two or three people who act as a Shalish in virtually every case, and usually the Dayanim are pretty quick to come to a Heskim which one to use. Now, a Zabla is, as we'll see, a very problematic setup. What happens is, essentially, that instead of having a Bezdin of three impartial Dayanim, instead of three Dayanim that have no connection to either party, you have a Bezdin where two of the Dayanim have some level of bias. But the point over here is that the biases cancel each other out. One buyer is chosen by one side, the other is chosen by the other. And therefore, the assumption is that the two biases will cancel out and we will end up with a better result. In fact, al pi halacha, according to the way most Rishonim learn the Gemara in Sanhedrin, a Zabla is preferred over a regular Bezdin. Because since each party chooses one buyer, each party feels that there's someone on the Bezdin that's representing my interests, there's someone who's defending me, who's standing up for me. Therefore, if he loses, he says, listen, I know someone, the reason why I lost was not because the Bezdin ignored me, it's not because they just didn't hear my side, it's because even though I had an advocate, he was outvoted. They heard what he had to say, they disagreed, and therefore, okay, so it must be al pi halacha, I'm wrong, and he is more likely to accept the verdict. The problem is, and this is a problem that's been around from the times of Rishonim, what exactly is the role of a buyer? What's his job? A regular dayan, they're three dayanim, they know their job. Their job is to give an unbiased psak what they think is right. When a person is a boirer, he was appointed by one side. How far is he supposed to go in advocating for his side? What are his chiyuvim? Now this has been a problem really from the times of Rishonim. The Rosh already talks about the chaseri hadas, the boirim who thought they were tayanim. They thought their job was to advocate for their party, even if they were wrong, just making up arguments, trying to fool the other Dayanim into paskening like their side. The Rosh says that's clearly wrong. However, exactly what a buyer is supposed to do is not entirely clear. There are a number of different shittas in the Rishonim. The Rosh begins by explaining the role of a buyer, explaining Rashi, that really a buyer is supposed to be a regular Dayan. If that's the case, what's the advantage of a Zabla? Why will the parties feel better that they had an advocate? So the Rosh begins by explaining Rashi that really it's not true. The point is, each party will think, since I appointed the buyer, he's probably sticking up for me. But, Zuck the Rosh, that's just what the parties will think. It's a mistake. The Dayan himself is not supposed to stick up for his side. Dayan is supposed to act entirely impartially, and he's supposed to do what's right. Now, as we'll see in a minute, the Rosh is probably cannot be taken literally, but at least the way it begins with, seems to say that a boyer has to act like a regular diet. The Ran in Sanhedrin has a similar pshat. What he says is that really a boyer is a regular diet. However, he says there's a problem. If you have a Bezdin and one party appointed the Dayanim, so it's possible that the Dayan will feel a certain akaris atoy that you appointed me as a Dayan. And therefore, even though he doesn't have a relationship with the person, even though they didn't get paid for Dinei Torah, but there'll be some sort of netiya or negius towards the party that appointed him. Zakharan, to avoid that potential problem, we say that let one party pick one day, the other party will pick the other day. And therefore, in the event that you have some sort of negius or a perception of negius, it'll cancel out and everything will be fine. So in the Ran also, it is clear that if you ask a boyer what his job is to act as a regular impartial dayan. Because we have this chashash that subconsciously there's some level of negiyas or akaras atoiv, so we split it to make sure they'll cancel themselves out. But it's clear in the Ran that a boyer is supposed to be acting as a regular dayan. Now that being said, the Lashon of Isma and the Bach, and really the pashtus of the Lashon Rama and the Rosh at the end of the Siman also says a similar point. They all say that a boyer is supposed to be mahapich b'schus his party. Now they make it very clear. He's an advocate, but there are limits. At the end of the day, he can only push, or he can only push paskin what he thinks are right. He can only make an argument if he believes that it's true. However, according to, I think, most of the Akhrayim, there's an understanding that there is some amount of bias, a certain level of negius that a boyer will have to his side because he chose him. I think the best way to understand it is to go briefly through a halacha in Siman Dayan. And that is, there's a halacha that a dayan, you cannot sit on a din Torah for your best friend. An oyev, and for that matter a soine, if you have an enemy, you're apostle to be a dayan. Now most Rishonim say there are two different levels of an oyev. There's one oyev, mamish, a close friend, they love each other. Shoshbinoy, one of them just got married, and it's literally during the middle of the Shavuot Brachos. So there, part of the wedding party, so they are ready, because you're an oyev, you have a relationship with a person, you're posel. And the reason is, the Gemara, it's a machlokes, whether it's a svara, whether it's a drasha, but the reason is very simple, because you have a negius. If it's your best friend, then you will have a negius. You're not going to see the weaknesses of his position. You will tend to side with him, and that's why you're posel nikar adin. That is when you're a close friend. What happens in the more common case, this is not a best friend, but in Dinei Torah, especially we live in small, close-knit communities, you know the person. He was a classmate from 20, 30 years ago. You're friendly with him. Your kids went to school together. So you have a relationship with him. You're friendly with him, but you're not a close friend. So me'ikar hadin, you're still kosher to be a dayan. You're not a karev. There's no money in. There's no negius. You know the person. You're friendly with him. That is not a psol me'ikar hadin. Nevertheless, it is a midas chasidus, and the Ramah brings this down, you should not be sitting on a din Torah unless you are completely neutral. L'chad chilo, you should not have any relationship whatsoever with either party. Now, after the fact, if a person sits on a din Torah with someone who he's friendly with, so if he's a close friend, the psak is possible, because he was possible to be a dayan. If it's not a close friend, just someone who he has a relationship with, after the fact, it's not a psul, it's just something that l'chadchila should be avoided because it will taint the process. Zokta Ramah, this halacha, when you know someone, you have a relationship with them, you cannot sit on a din Torah. This midas chasidus, not a close friend, but just someone who you're friendly with. Zokta Ramah, this does not apply by a zabla. In other words, if you're doing a zabla, you can choose a boyer that you're friendly with. You're friendly with him, there'll be a certain negius. He'll have certain netiyah to you. Zokta Ramah, every example is like that. When you choose a boyer because you chose him, so he has a negiyus. He has a relationship with you. He understands he's going to be mahapich in your schos. The azabla is mutter because each party picks their boyer, and overall the shalosh will make sure that things that the halacha comes out the right way. But the way the Ramah is understanding it, this middle level where you have a relationship where there's a cheshash, there will be some sort of netiyah towards your side, that he says exists by every zabla, and that's why an oyev is not a problem. So it's clear in the Ramah that the expectation is that if you choose a boyer, he will understand that you chose him. He will feel a certain sense of negius or obligation to go ahead, and if you are right, to come up with the reasons why you're right. He will be similar to a friend who is not considered impartial, because again, he's trying to do what's right, but he has a certain level of negius. So in such a case, because each party picked their boyer, you have a shalish in between to make sure that everything stays straight, and at the end of the day, he's going to have to make the decision which arguments are correct and which arguments are tainted by the bias. So that is the way a zabla is supposed to operate. So if you're in a case where you have a bezdin kavua and there's a psul, let's say the av bezdin's son is the one that you're fighting with, you'll have to either appoint another dayan or you'll have to go to another town. But when there's a bezdin kavua, but enechaim, even by a bezdin kavua, if there is a psul, if there is a relationship or a reason why they're psul, they cannot act as bezdin. So it comes out that in a case of a boyer, in a case of zabla, everyone agrees a dayan has to do what's right at the end of the day. If his side is wrong, he has to paskin against him. However, there is a certain amount of being mahapeh peschusay. Just like if it's a friend, subconsciously you're going to push a little bit harder, you're going to try to be a little bit creative to see maybe he really is right. So that's expected by your boyers as well, that you will have a certain natiya towards your side. But ultimately, if all the Rishonim agree that if your side is wrong, if you see that they're not in the right, you have to paskin against them. You cannot try to fool the other dayanim or try to slant the psak in a way that is shalei kedin.
Is he allowed to? Is a boyer allowed to listen to the tayyus of one of his parties not in the presence of the other?
Excellent, excellent. So me'ikar hadin, according to all the Rishonim, a boyerus has to function like a regular bezdin. And just like a regular bezdin, if you have a din Torah, the halacha is shemaya ben achechem. A dayan is not allowed to hear one side's arguments before the din Torah, because that creates a bias. If you go over to a dayan before the case and you tell him why you're right, so then when the din Torah comes and now he hears, he's coming in with certain preconceived notions, and it's difficult to change that. So by a regular bezdin, it is usur for a dayan to hear one side before hearing the other. It has to be all done at the din Torah with both parties present. So hu hadin, by a zablo as well. It would be usur for a boyer to hear one side of the story before the din Torah. That being said, the panim, even in the times of the panim eras, this was not the common practice. And the common practice is when you hired a boyer, you sat him down and you went through your entire case. The panim eras says, it's possible. It's usur maker hadin, and he says this is not the zabla that the Gemara was referring to, and it should not be done. In practice today, it is done. The boyerim almost always, when they're hired by their side, sit down, they discuss the case, they go back and forth, and it is one of the many problems of zabla. We'll discuss a few other problems shortly. But so Yaruch HaShulchan defends it. What the Aruch HaShulchan says is he agrees to the Panim Eras. Megar Hadin, this is completely awesome. However, he says, because today it is the standard practice, anyone who goes to a Zabla goes with that understanding. He knows that each side will have ex parte communication. The same way his counterparty will do it, he is doing it as well. It is Savar V'Kibel, and therefore he says that is the justification for the practice. Now, what will come out, and the Shevet HaLevi points this out, and this is certainly good advice today, the Aruch HaShulchan is not coming to say that this is the right thing to do. Clearly, Api Halacha, it's awesome. What the Aruch HaShulchan is saying is, because everyone does it, everyone who goes into a Zabla is accepting it. But if you don't want this, if you want the Zabla to run Api Halacha, Zog the Shevet HaLevi, you have every right before the Din Torah to put your foot down and say, I'm willing to go to a Zabla, but I insist it follow the normal procedure. And I insist that neither boyer speak to their side. And if you say that, you have every right to make that t'nai, and the other person will be forced to listen, because the Aruch HaShulchan, while he's explaining the minhag or the practice, the explanation is only if both parties agree, they can do what they want. But if you object, you certainly have the right to insist that the boyer is run like a regular Din Torah, and this certainly is good advice. If you ever are called to a Din Torah, and you have the misfortune of being forced to a Zabla, what you certainly should do is make it clear in advance before you sign the Shtar Berurin that while you may have the halachic right to be forced to a Zabla, the Zabla should follow halacha. And you should make a tenai beforehand that neither Boira will speak to their side. There's a machloikis whether it passes b'di'evit. Most places actually hold that it will not. The Bach says that it will, but it's certainly not good practice. It will also make the psak unenforceable. No court of law will enforce an arbitration award if it can be proven there was ex parte communication. Well, when it wasn't widespread, it was certainly shalai kedin, but I think it's been widespread. Even the Panim Eras rails against it, but it seems to have been common enough for the Panim Eras to have to make a macha. So it certainly has been going on for a long time. Again, the Aruch HaShulchan is just explaining the minhag. I don't believe anyone says this is lechatchila. Now, another point that I will add, and this is a general observation, one of the problems, many of the horror stories that you hear about Batei Din come from cases of Zabla. There are many reasons for this. First of all, when you go to a regular Beis Din, there's a structure. There's a Safra Dedaina who goes back and forth between the parties, and there's no communication, or there shouldn't be any communication between the parties and the actual Dayanim. And that makes for a much more wholesome and fair process. Besides that, when you have a Beis Din Kavua, when you have a formal Beis Din, they all work together. They all know each other's schedules, and you can set up a Din Torah assuming the parties are cooperative, you can set it up fairly quickly and you can move through the process. When you have a Zabla, there's no Safra Dedaina, there's no secretary who's in charge to coordinate, and besides that, you have three different Dayanim from three different Batei Din, perhaps three different cities, that have nothing to do with each other, and anytime you want to schedule a session, you have to work out three people's schedules plus the Tainim plus the parties. It can take forever just to get a session set up. There's no coordination between anyone, and it just the process gets drawn out. It can take forever. And I will tell you, I recently agreed to take on a few cases of Zabla. It was about two, three months ago. There were a number of motivations. One of the motivations was I figured I'm giving shiurim on Beis Din about Zabla, so I'll sit on a few cases of Beirus and be able to report back firsthand insights over the process, the psak, the enforcement, how everything plays itself out. The only insight I can report back is that it takes forever to actually set these things up. Because of the four that I said yes to, actually none of them had a session yet. So that just gives you a sense for how long Zablos or Boyeris takes. Not necessarily because in these particular cases, there's no one who is actively trying to subvert the process, but simply everyone is busy. Everyone has conflicts with their schedules, and this person, Sunday is not good, this person's only Sunday, and it just takes time. There's no one in charge. There's no secretary. This unfortunately is the way some people do dance. The Beis Din HaMazmen, if they see that it's just not going anywhere, the Beis Din HaMazmen will put their foot down. And they will say, you have the right to do Zabla, it means you have to do it. Saying that you will do it and never happening is not called choosing the Zabla. Very well, it's Lav Dafka, the Nitzvah, the one that's delaying. Very often the Teveya chooses a Tayin or a Boyer, and in these cases, it's not one party over the other, it's just the process, because there's no... They don't work together on a regular basis. Now, another issue you run into with Zablas is, as we've pointed out, the exact role of a boyer is not entirely clear. And even from the times of the Rosh and the Tanim Eros, there were boyerim who believed that their responsibility was to advocate for their side no matter what, whether they were right or they were wrong. Unfortunately, these Boyerim that were around in the times of the Rosh are still around today. And you certainly do have some Boyerim that that never actually went through this halacha, and they believe that they have to defend or push their side no matter what. Now, I was actually planning on coming in and giving you a list of which Boyerim are Erluch and which ones aren't. A short list. But I realized I would get into trouble really on both ends. Obviously, if I read off a list of the ones that don't follow halacha and they push for their sides no matter what, they would certainly be upset that you're mavayish them barabim. But my concern is really the other ones. Even the erlicha ones will be upset at me that perhaps that telling them they're erlicha and they don't push when they're not supposed to might be bad for business. So I think I'm going to decline to actually name names in public. I will make one general observation, and that is, when you go to a Zabla, the shalish, the person who's in the middle, is generally a very self-confident and intelligent person, because it's a difficult role to play, and there are only two or three that more or less sit on all of the cases, because these are the people that both sides trust that he'll do what's right, he will not be influenced by one person's boyer or tayin, and he'll do what's right. Now, assuming you have that confidence in the shalish, he is an intelligent person who is not a pushover, he's going to pass him the way he feels he should. Now you have two choices. One person is going to have a boyer who is a thug. He is going to push for his side on every single issue that comes up. He's going to say his side is right, and he's going to push, whether it makes sense, it doesn't make sense, al pi halacha, not al pi halacha. His side has never made a mistake in their life. The other person is going to have a boyer who's an erlich talmid chacham. When his side is wrong, he's going to say, okay, he's wrong on this. When his side is right, he's going to make it clear his side is right. And when they are tzadim, or where they are sorry, he will say, there's a rashba, there's this, and he's going to raise all reasonable arguments why that favor his tzad. Overall, who do you think will do better in this din Torah? So, while on one hand, people like thinking, oh, this guy, he's a bulvan, and he's a bulldozer, and he yells and screams, but if you have some level of confidence in the sholish, ultimately, having a boyer who is a reasonable person, having a boyer who is, while we will advocate for you where it's appropriate to advocate, but is willing to concede on the points that he's going to lose on anyway, at the end of the day, you're probably better off with such a boyer. So this idea or this knee-jerk reaction, you just take the biggest or the most pushiest person with the most fearsome reputation, I am not overly convinced in the long run that's really helpful. I think either of it. I think having a boyer that follows halacha, that has the respect of the shalish, in the long run will end up with a better result. Now, if a community wants to avoid this problem and get rid of the issue of zabla, a way to deal with it is to set up a bezin kavua. The way to deal with it is for the city to get together and appoint three dayanim as the official dayanim of the city who will deal with all matters, in which case you will not need, no one will have the right to say, I want to go to a zabla. The problem is that requires a certain amount of achdus. You need the community to get together and agree on three people. And it also means giving three people a tremendous amount of power, which today people are very often hesitant to do. So in the absence of that achdus, and in the absence of getting together and setting up a formal bezdin, the unfortunate outcome is you do have to deal with zablas, and there are times where you fall into the cracks in such cases. Now, just one last point. When, going back to our initial point, that when you get a hazmana, neither party can force impose their choice of bezdin on the other. So one bit of advice is that in the back and forth and in the dance over this bezdin, that bezdin, you certainly should do your homework and only go to a bezdin that you're comfortable with. If ultimately the choice that's in front of you is to go to a bezdin that is okay, but just not your first choice, or going to a zabla, you are probably much better off picking that okay bezdin than ending up in the zabla system. This is not always true, but you should just be aware that the pain or the potential pitfalls in a zabla usually are much greater than the issues that you can come in a normal, regular bezdin kavua. And therefore, as long as it's a reasonable bezdin, again, you have to do your homework, make sure it's a good bezdin, but as long as it's a reasonable bezdin, even if it's not your first choice, you're very often better if the alternative is a zabla.